Okay. All right. Welcome, everybody. Thank you very much for joining Abhinav's committee. So we'll ask Abhinav to give us the presentation for his preliminary examination.
Yes, should I start? Understanding?
Yes, you can. You can start, Abhinav.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you all for joining today in person and over Zoom. I will be giving my preliminary proposal presentation today, and let's get started. So, an overview of the presentation is I will go through an introduction initially on the big picture idea of what we're trying to do and accomplish. Then we'll go through a few work that we have already done, and we are doing it right now. And we will finish up with some future proposed work and some timeline on when we want to complete those. So for the introduction, okay, so the overarching goal for this dissertation is to address some mathematical and computational gaps in the development of digital twins for jet engines. It's a very specific application, so we are trying to focus on that. And we have some preliminary work. Hold on. Just 1 minute. I will stop sharing and I want to see one thing. So, sorry, just think I might have the wrong presentation, not the updated one. So let me start again. Okay. Sure. Can you see? Yeah, can you see my screen? Understand?
Yes.
Sorry, I was muted. Yes, we can see. Go ahead.
Okay. So yes, it's a similar slide, but it'll written differently. So we'll have the introduction, some past and current work, and we will conclude with the future proposed work. So yeah, as I said earlier, the overarching goal is to address the mathematical and the computational gaps in the development of digital twins of jet engines. So these are some of the research questions we want to answer, and the ones in STAR are the ones our lab and myself in particular will be focused on. So we want to develop a fully high-fidelity CFD model of a jet engine. We want to develop a data-driven reduced order model of the same jet engine. We want to carry out some uncertainty quantification using noisy measurements from physical twin and get better estimates of states such as velocity and pressure. And also, we will have a particle injection, which will be done artificially, and it will be modeled through an engine erosion model, which is basically stochastic. And we want to calibrate the parameters of that too from the noisy measurements again. And we want to compute corrective inaction and failure prediction by using the calibrated digital twin. Another major aspect would be develop variation on particle, especially particle-based filtering for data simulation across multi-fidelity models, because we'll have a high-fidelity CFD model and a low-fidelity reduced order model. And we need to develop DA methods for that. Also, we need to take care of methods which can handle flow with features and shocks, because that is very relevant in this kind of application. And I have a smaller star because we might have to look into this later when we actually run the experiments, which is optimal experimental design to select the most informative observation locations so that we get the maximum information possible for our data simulation. So the outline of this presentation is we'll first go through the work we've already done. So the first work was motivated by this. So machine learning actually plays a very important role in data-driven reduced order modeling and handling noisy data. So as a preliminary exercise, long time ago, we explored several numerical techniques to improve the ATOM optimizer, which led us to the work which we call GARC-ATOM. We'll go into details later. Then we focus on developing particle filters based on optimal transport. which we think will be useful in a digital twin project. And then we, okay, so since we have so many data assimilation algorithms, we decided that we need a single software suite where we can implement new methods and compare the older methods. And we have some isolated ODs and PDs, and also we will take help from another library, which I will discuss more later. So, okay, so this is the first project that we did, this Gark Adam. So Adam is one of the most famous and I think one of the most cited papers in machine learning. It is used by almost all optimizers, by all machine learning optimization, and it's called adaptive type of methods. So this literature by Silva and Gazio showed that you can represent any adaptive method, including Adam, in the form of an ODE, which is equation one. So if you look at equation one, theta are basically the parameters, the learnable parameters of the network. M and V are the momentum and velocity that we know in the Adam formulation. So propagating this ODE in time actually updates or optimizes the parameters theta of the model. And the hyperparameter D, R, P, and Q determines what kind of adaptive method. And this literature, which is cited below, actually gives you the values for this. So, GARC, what is a GARC? So, it's called Generalized Structured Additive Rangakata, which is a more generalized version of the ARC methods. GARC method actually facilitates both additive and component-wise state of an ODE. It's more generalized. So if you look at the two equations, the first equation on the left is basically a component split, and the one on the right is an additive split of the right-hand side of the ODE. So we take advantage from the rich literature that I've cited below to get us the required coefficients, because in Rangakata methods, we have the coefficients, and the order conditions developed in this literature helps us with the coefficients with which we can actually implement and optimize this or solve this ODE. And we show that the original Adam can be split component-wise. Before we go to the component-wise, IMAX methods. So when we split, as I showed in the last slide, that you can split the right-hand side component-wise, this is equation number two. So we consider that Y is basically the non-stiff components and F is the non-stiff dynamics, whereas Z is the stiff component and G is basically the stiff dynamics. So it makes intuitive sense that we discretize the stiff component with an implicit method and the non-stiff component with an explicit method, because if you want to do explicit for a stiff, it leads to very high constraints on the step size, and you need to take very small step size. So this is makes more intuitive sense. So okay, this slide is a little dense, but I'll try to explain. If you look at equation four, since it's a Gark method, it's generalized additive Rangakata. Instead of having one A matrix, we have multiple A matrix. So A superscript EE is basically the explicit method. AII is basically the diagonal term, basically is the implicit method. And the other two terms are basically the coupling terms, which carries over information from the explicit to the implicit. So if you look at equation 3a, the first one actually does the explicit update, but we are using G, which is a stiff component or the stiff dynamics, to update to the update. So we use this coupling terms here, and in equation 3b, the first equation, AII is the implicit update that we do, and we use this to update the or calculate the intermediate stages, and finally we do calculate the state at the next time step by combining this using the b's that we have, the b vector we have. So we link that to Adam and say that okay, our we split the Adam in this particular way, which is shown in the first equation, where our y, the stiff part, is basically the Y is the non-stiff part and Z is the stiff part. And we can write the partitioned or the component-wise partitioned in the form of equation five. where again M and V are our non-stiff and theta and T are our stiff part. So if you look carefully at this equation 5, theta or d theta by dt doesn't depend on theta. So even if we apply an implicit method, it's not really implicit because we don't not solve any algebraic kind of equation. So that is an advantage in this kind of component split. And I haven't written the Butcher tableau for the IMX solver, but when we do an IMX Euler method and discretize the ODE that we saw earlier, we get the equation 6 basically. And for comparison, I've written equation 7, which is the original atom that we have in the literature. So the terms that are highlighted are basically to show that this is equivalent in one some sense. So that 1 minus HRTN is equivalent to beta 1, and beta 2 is equivalent to that 1 minus HQTN, and similarly for the other ones. So we concluded from this that the IMX solid discretization is basically gives us the original atom that we have in the literature or that we use in the machine learning. So we got some results with this, which I will show later. And so we have thought that okay, so IMX solver is basically first order method. Why not try some higher order method and see what happens? So we tried several second order, third order methods, and we kept the one that works best in most of the cases. We call it the trapezoidal method. So this is the Butcher tableau in equation 8. And again, you have to remember that the top part is basically the non-stiff part, the bottom is the stiff part. So this our name basically comes from this part because it's basically diagonal implicit trapezoidal method. So when we apply this and write our algorithm, something like this shows up, where the thing to take note is we have two gradient evaluations because of the second order method. We have one gradient evaluation at this step, and we have another gradient evaluation at this step with an updated parameter. And then we combine everything using the B vector. So we implemented this in few applications. And so first one was, I haven't put much information, but I will tell what we are trying to do. So for this experiment, we have one simple feedforward network with one hidden layer with 100 neurons and tannish activation function. And what we are trying to learn is if you give the neural network the state at time t, it will give you the state at time t plus 1. And we carried out the experiments and we see that, another thing is since we have multiple gradient evaluations in higher order method, we have scaled our loss function by the number of gradient evaluations to have a fair comparison, like which one is doing better or faster. If I don't do that, they will actually end at the same point and look very similar. So in this case, the purple one is the trapezoidal method, and the yellow one is the atom, the original atom. And it starts worse than atom, but slowly it picks up and does something that somewhat better than atom as the training progresses. So this was the very simple first implementation that we did. This was a classification basically. So where you have two spirals, one is red, one is blue, and you feed the neural network with a point with x and y coordinates, and it tells you to which spiral it belongs. And we use the regular cross entropy loss and everything. I think we use a cyclic learning rate instead of a continuous learning rate because it helps. And in this case too, we see that it does somewhat similar in the beginning, then it seems to beat out atom at this part, and we were very happy with this. So this is so we went to more machine learning problems, which are like classical machine learning problems. So we tried few, and this is the one I have put here. It's basically VGG network on Cypher with Cypher 10. In this case, although it trains very similar and the accuracy remains very similar, we do not see any advantage of the extra gradient evaluations. So since this gradient evaluation is scaled, they are looking a little different. If we don't scale them, I think they will just overlap in this case. So this is something we also saw with MNIST, with a simple feedforward network. And we think it might have to do with the architecture and the loss function, because if SGD can be used to solve these problems, we do not think that the new IMX Atom can, or IMX trapezoidal, will have any added advantage like we saw in the other two problems. But yeah, for the two machine learning problems we tried, we did not get any advantage for the extra gradient evaluation, although it trains similarly and has similar accuracy. So I think that's the end of the first part. So I'll stop for questions, comments, suggestions.
So Abhinav, this part of the work started as a course project, right? Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I was in Dr. Bogart's course, and we were doing optimization, and I proposed, we actually started with not IMX Solr, we started with forward Euler and second order methods and third RK4 methods, and we saw some advantage in those cases. And then we realized, okay, why not formulate it like this and see if we can take advantage of the IMX methods and if we can get something better. And we got something better in some of the products, or at least it does very similar. But in the machine learning things, yeah, it doesn't give us any advantage as of now.
Can you give me a rough idea of the size of the systems that you have here?
I mean, the parameters.
Yeah, the number of parameters you're training and the size of the ODEs, stiff versus non-stiff parts.
So parameters for this is, it has 100 neurons. So this is very small. I know for VGG it's in the, at least in the few 100,000 parameters. It's a very big network and it takes a lot of time to train that. For this, okay, yeah, I did not tell the network of this. Okay, so this is basically a 8 hidden layer neural network with 8 layers in each. And yeah, and this was the biggest problem we tried. And this was very simple first step, right, which is basically a single hidden layer with 100 neurons, and that's it. And you have one input and one output. There's one more question. I can move on, I guess. Okay. So next topic is particle filter based on optimal transport. So before we go to particle filters, so what is data assimilation? Data assimilation is basically combining noisy measurements from sensors with your current knowledge of the system, and you try to get a better estimate of your states, which is called the posterior, and your current states are basically the prior or the forecast. That there are ensemble-based methods like ENKF, ETKF. There are variation methods like 3D-VAR and 4D-VAR, and that is particle filters. In this study, we focus on particle filters. So the advantage of particle filters is it doesn't have a linear Gaussian assumption like the other ensemble-based methods. So this is a more realistic case in real-life application. Like I was looking through a few papers, and I found this. I think a few days back. And Wright already has a transport filter map based on linear programming, which is in a more discrete sense, but we are trying to use the Wasserstein metric and do this in a more continuous formulation. We'll go through the details in a few more slides. And we try this in lower dimensions. We have very good results. And we are trying to explore ways to extend the higher dimension in a more, I don't know, feasible and scalable way. Particle filters approximate a given distribution by sum of direct deltas, as you can see in the equations. And this is exactly the limiting case. They're notoriously difficult to scale in higher dimensions. And in sequential data assimilation with particle filters, it's often possible that few or even one particle gets all the weights, which means there is no spread, and it leads to particle degeneracy if you do a sequential assimilation with that. And these are some of the existing filters that's out there. We will be focusing and comparing our thing with ensemble transport particle filter, because it's also based on kind of Wasserstein metric, but in a more discrete sense. So The Wasserstein, the original Wasserstein based on Cantor-Rubinstein formulation is basically what is shown in the formula there. It basically signifies the amount of work done, that means amount of work that needs to be done to move from one distribution to the other. So I think okay, if the lowercase p is one, it's basically called the Earth mover distance, which basically goes back to Monge problem where you have to dig trenches and build walls and how do you do it most efficiently? Wasserstein metric, as in the Gans paper here, showed that it is more favorable choice for gradient-based optimization, which we are trying to do. That's why we chose this metric. And again, referring to this Wasserstein GAN, we have the formulation that is in the first equation. It basically is a difference between the expected value of expected values, where x and z are samples from two different distributions, and f is Lipschitz continuous. In this case, it has to be less than equal to 1 because p is equal to 1. If p is something else, it will be that. And this can be approximated using few samples that I have shown in the second line of the equation. So for some notations, x of fe, so this is a two-dimensional case. So we have x and z. Our z is observed, x is unobserved. And this f is basically our forecast or background samples that we have. WAE is basically the weights or the likelihood weights that we calculate using the observation that we have. We consider that z AE is the updated Z component, which we update using some existing ENKF RHF methods. And we calculate this Wasserstein metric as a function of this XE. The next step would be to minimize that so that we get equally weighted samples from the posterior, while our prior weights are modified by the likelihood. The advantage of getting equally weighted samples is it removes the problem of particle degeneracy where all the samples get one sample gets all the weight and everyone loses weight and we have particle degeneracy. So if you can do this properly, hopefully we will have equally weighted samples from the analysis. So as I said, we have to minimize that function, which is a function of XE, and find the positions that actually minimizes this. And for F, in the original GANs paper, it's basically a neural network. We can have any basis functions for that. We tried a few, but this formulation doesn't work. Whenever we do this, it collapses to one particle after optimization. Someone actually tried explaining this, which I've referred to, why this might happen, that it might not approximate the original Wasserstein distance. That might be a reason, but we don't know. It doesn't work. It just collapses to one single particle. So we moved a step back and went to 1D, where we have closed form solutions as shown in equation 11. This is basically the difference of CDFs of two distribution, FA and FC. And we can approximate this CDF using some basis functions again, which is shown in this equation, which is exactly similar to what we had just in 1D. And this uppercase K is basically some kernel. In this case, we are using an integrated Gaussian kernel. So instead of having a bump, it is basically a CDF kind of kernel. And the absolute value in equation 11, we replace that with a quadratic cost because we want to calculate the exact gradient, which helps in optimization. And we have few results in 1D. So I have to explain. Okay. So I don't know if it's visible and there's a spelling mistake. Okay. So this is my prior distribution, which is basically uniform. We have an observation at -1 with a Gaussian distribution, which is basically this one. And the blue ones down here are our prior particles, which we sampled from the uniform distribution. The green one is basically what we have using the 1D Wasserstein-based formulation. And I've compared it with a few other methods that's out there. Since I have the closed form solution or the analytical posterior, I also did some MCMC to see if it doing something right or wrong. And I also have the analysis when the histogram plot for the Wasserstein-based filter, where it seems to capture the mean and the spread quite well. Next, we tried a little more complicated distribution. So the color code is same. So our purple one is basically the prior. We sample from it, and we have an observation, which is Gaussian, and then we have analytical posterior. That's why I could draw that, and we were trying to see if this new filter can handle this or not. And similarly, it does very well. The only thing is, in this filter, we have something called the bandwidth, which is a Hacker parameter, which needs to be tuned to get results. So we thought it works in 1D. So with some assumptions, why not try it in 2D? So obviously we assume that one state is observed while the other one is not observed, and the observations are independent of other states. The kernel we use uses a diagonal bandwidth. So if we have this assumption, we can actually separate out these terms. If you don't have the diagonal bandwidth assumption, if the off-diagonal terms are not zero, the covariance is not zero, we will not have the separation of these kernels, which is basically 1D kernels in each state. So we thought, okay, let's try this. Let's see what happens. It's more easier to handle this. And again, the cost is replaced by not the cost is not the absolute value. We have a quadratic cost so that we can calculate the gradient analytically. So this is pretty non-Gaussian case, right? I've compared it with ETPF, which does very well. And even in our filter, we observe that my observation is at 60. And it's basically a Gaussian, and it somewhat captures the analysis region quite well. If I do ENKF, it will actually spread out the entire area because it has a Gaussian assumption. But this seems to do well. So after this, we got encouraged by this, and we tried applying this to sequential data simulation, where you do this again and again. It doesn't work. It fails after it fails after some time. It blows up. So we turn to something called the North Rosenblatt rearrangement. We are trying to develop a triangular transport map for particle filters, which has been developed by Marzouk. So basically, it means our states are updated, our current state is updated based on the previous states. So if you look at this expression, x1, x2, x3 are our states, y1 and y2 are the observation of state 1 and state 2. We don't observe state 3. And if we have the assumption that our observations are independent of other states, and we have this triangular kind of assumption where x1 is updated on its own, x2 is updated based on x1, and x3 is updated based on x2 and x1. So in this case, the most a challenging part would be to calculate these conditionals based on the updated x1 and updated x2 and x1. So we made a little more simplification on this, and we dropped this assumption that x2 is conditioned by x1. So we update each state independently, considering we have all the observations. So we wanted to see if this filter works at all in that case, which is very similar to the rank histogram filter that Anderson developed. And for that, this is basically ENKF Lorentz 63 with. Not with ENK, with a lot of things. Anyways, so we see that the filter that we have is the CDF. It basically doesn't blow up and stays stable with some rejuvenation, obviously. If you don't have rejuvenation or very less rejuvenation, it can shoot up. But with some rejuvenation, it seems to stay stable. And we believe it will become better if we can somehow address this assumption that we made. If we can calculate these conditionals properly and efficiently in a scalable way, we are pretty sure these lines will come slowly towards ETKF, ENKF. So that is where what we are trying to do right now. We have these results as of now. And if we can do that, it will be good contribution because particle filters doesn't work. And this is with just 100 particles, which is very less for particle filters. So, yep, I think before I start, I'll stop for questions.
Okay, if there are no comments, you can continue.
Okay, so as I told you, we have a lot of algorithms being developed, not just by me, but also by my colleagues. And we want to have one place where everything is there, and so that we can compare and do post-processing on those. So that was the motivation for starting this project a long time back. So it should be a good resource for academia researchers to develop and test new algorithms against existing state-of-the-art algorithms. And we use OTP, which is again developed in our lab, which is basically a MATLAB suite of initial value problems. We have a lot of ODEs there, which we can import into DA tools and run it basically as forward our model. We are actually documenting all the tutorials so that helps people to run. And we have some post-processing capabilities, which I will show in some slides, and we'll add more as we get more feedback from the community. So, okay, it's visible. So this is a mine tree of what we have right now, and hopefully it will keep growing as we do more work. Right now we have ensemble-based filters, some particle-based filters, some variational filters. Some are under work, like Fokker-Planck is under work. We have some post-processing capabilities, and we have some few problems. I did not write exact problems. Because we're still deciding what to keep, what not. So I'll give a very brief description of how we organize our the entire software. So we have a few base classes. Like model is a base class for all ODEs and PDEs that can handle the OTP, which is the MATLAB suite for ODE test problems. We have some standalone ODEs and PDEs, and we are actually working on making it robust so that it can handle black box model operators and adjoints later. That is a little difficult and involved, and that's something that is ongoing. But we have the first two, so that's relatively simpler than this. DA base is basically base class for any kind of filters that we have. Observation.m handles all the observations. For now, we need the user to supply us the observation operator and the linearize that too if required. And for uncertainty is basically the noise that we have. I think right now we have Gaussian, Laplace, and uniform, but we might add more if required. So a DA base is all the is a parent class of all the filters. So we have basically three kind of filters as of now. One is the ensemble based, which includes both particle and ensemble based filters. That is the ENF. So this is the base class for every ensemble filter, and everything that derives from ENF.F just implements the analysis, because the analysis is different. Everything else remains the same, like the model propagation and everything. Var.m handles all the variational filters, and we might add some smoothers to it later. Gaussian filter is something that was developed by one of my colleagues. It's Gaussian mixture-based filters. So we have that kind of filters implemented too. Okay, this is an example. It's a very simple example of the post-processing capabilities that we have. So it's a very Lorentz tree with the NKF again. So I'm not sure if you can see it. So we can run this experiment against a set of ensemble size and a set of inflation. If you can see, this is ensemble size 8, 16, 24, 32, and this is the inflation. And this is a heat map of how it works in each case, each combination. And this is basically the RMSE that we have if people want to use this somewhere. We also have, okay, so you can see that it fails. So this white is basically it fails. This doesn't work. It basically goes to infinite, basically. So, and everything else works. And this basically gives you an idea of how good it is. Like the darker the color, I think the better it is. So yeah, this is okay. This is a rank histogram. Okay. So the left one is basically how you create a rank histogram for a given state. So if there are 10 states, we'll have 10 of these rank histograms. So what we do is we tally the truth against the analysis ensemble. And we create the bins using the analysis samples, and we put the truth in those bins and keep doing this throughout the entire simulation process. That's how it gives us this rank histogram. To have an idea of what it represents, the flatter it is, the better it tracks the truth. If your truth falls on the outer side, basically, I think means the spread of the analysis is very less, so it is not doing a good job. And if the one where it is convexing upwards, it basically means the spread of the analysis is very high. The truth falls in the center somewhere. And the KL divergence is basically this distribution kind of compared with a uniform distribution. So the closer it is to zero, the better it is. The farther away, the worse it is. So we have this four broad post-processing capabilities now. We might add more as and when required. So yep, before I start the next one, and so.
So is this tool something you're responsible for by yourself, or is this something you're part of a team that's developing?
Yeah, so I'm kind of the lead, but I have people who are also working on this. So like the Gaussian mixture filter is built by someone else, so he will implement that, but I'll have to take care of all the documentation and all the new implementation, whether they are confining to the rules, like maintaining a constant, I don't know, conventions and all those things. So I have to, and also add my own filters if I build.
Thanks.
Okay, finally coming back to digital twin that we talked about in the beginning. So we started this project very recently and we have some preliminary results. So basically, our physical twin is the jet engine, which is covered in the casing, but it has everything inside, it has a rotor and everything. So the VT-APPL will be responsible for carrying out experiments with this. And we also will be studying the degradation of the jet engine due to particle injection, which is one of the core part of the research. And this is the cross section on the bottom, if you see. Okay, so we will have a high fidelity model, as I said, and our high fidelity model will most probably be ANSYS fluent one. So on the left, you see the flow path for the JetCat engine. And this is something that our CFD collaborators gave us. It's basically a cross section that is cut across its surface area. And we thought of starting with something simpler, like having a 90 degree bend, which you can see is this part. So we have a 90 degree bend, which we are trying to see what happens in that. And we have done some simulations using some RANS model that's available in ANSYS. And right now, we can do some parametric study too with this, where we change the initial velocity and we can find how it changes the output velocity or the pressure or something like that. I also have had a plot for erosion model, but I'm not sure if I've done that right. So I did not put it here yet. But this is ongoing work that we are trying to do. First, we will do the 90 degree bend. Then, once the CFD team comes up with the entire model, which will take significant time because it has to be discretized and everything. And after that, we will continue with that model. But for initial start, we're trying to see what happens in a 90 degree bend. And so, for the future work, basically, the first step would be to prepare the report for DA tools and the filtering and publish it. And then the build up of the initial work of the DT project. So basically, as I said earlier, so we have physical measurements like geometry, fluid flow rate, sharp rotation. And we will use those to see how it changes the output velocity, temperature, and pressure. We will try to develop multi-fidelity particle filters, which will be used for both high-fidelity simulations and low-fidelity simulations. And this will be built on the existing literature that we already have, where one of our colleagues or alumni built this multi-fidelity ensemble Kalman filter. But we want to do this with particle filter because it has that it doesn't have that linear Gaussian assumption. Yeah, accurate estimation of the parameters of stochastic erosion model from the measurement of surface erosion is something that we need to do because And this will be done using DA again, because we have observation, we can see the surface erosion, and from that we have to do inverse problem and find the parameters of the stochastic erosion model. And again, if we need, and if the observations are not sufficient, we might have to do a optimal experimental design and find the most informative sensor locations if required. So here I just give some publications and or that is in preparation, that is already published, and what we want to do. So DA tools and the Wasserstein-based filter is basically in preparation right now. And we will have more, we'll add more as we work on the digital twin project. So this is a little bit of the timeline. So I wish to complete the digital Wasserstein-based filter and DA tools by in the next semester. Like at least have a published something on archive, and then continue with the publication process, because it might take time. Make progress on the digital twin work and throughout the entire next year, and most probably have research difference by next December, sometime around this time. And hopefully after that, final difference somewhere in spring. I think, yeah, that's all. If you have any questions, comments.
Okay, thank you, Abhinav. I will stop the recording.